But first, the remarkable story of Jill Bolte Taylor, a Harvard-trained brain scientist who suffered a devastating stroke and lived to tell the tale. In her memoir, My Stroke of Insight, Taylor recounts the crippling stroke that came out of nowhere, the unexpected euphoria it created, and then the long and arduous process of recovery. Anne Strainchamps asked Jill Bolte Taylor to describe what happened on December 10th, 1996.
On the morning of the stroke, I woke up, and the first thing I really realized was that I had this pulsing pain behind my left eye. And I just got up, and I realized that I was very sensitive, hypersensitive to light stimulation. So I closed the drapes and went into my exercise room, and I thought, you know, getting the blood dissipating through my brain would be a good thing. So I jumped onto my CardioGlider, and I was exercising on this thing, realizing that as I looked down at my hands, they looked like primitive claws grasping onto this bar.
How long did it take before you realized you were having a stroke?
Oh, it was probably 45 minutes to an hour.
Wow.
And it wasn't until my right arm went totally paralyzed. And that, to me, was the warning sign of stroke. Everything else was just peculiar, weird neurological stuff that was interesting through the eyes of a brain scientist. You know, I'm trying to assess what's going on, what circuits are involved. Is this a migraine? Is this something else that I'd never experienced before? What was it?
Eventually, you began to lose the ability to speak. But were you still thinking in words inside your head that whole time?
It was interesting because, you know, we think in two ways. Our right hemisphere thinks in pictures and images and essentially running a videotape of our experience moment by moment. And the left hemisphere places language and words on our experience so that we're talking to ourselves. And I would have these intermittent waves of having absolutely no language whatsoever where my mind was absolutely silent and all I was doing was observing through the video, if you will. And then the language would come back online and I could reattach to the external world and my relationship to it. Because when I lost language, I lost my identity. I lost the part of my brain that says, my name is Jill Bolte Taylor. I am a neuroanatomist. This is where I live, etc. So as the language cut out, it also shut out my relationship to the external world.
Mm. So what happened when, for instance, you were able to dial 911 and people showed up and, you know, took you to the hospital? Were you able to talk then?
Well, actually, I was not able to dial 911 because the area in my brain that understood numbers was actually the location of where the blood vessel was that exploded. So I didn't have any numbers. I had no ability to even understand what a 911 was. But I did manage to call work, but I couldn't remember the number. So I found a business card of mine that had my phone number on it. And at that point, I could not distinguish what a number was, but I matched the shape of the squiggles on the business card to the shape of the squiggles on the phone pad. And then when my colleague answered the phone, fortunately, he was at his desk. When he spoke to me, it was roar, 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 roar. He sounded very garbled, and I couldn't understand his specifics. But I could tell by his intonation, I could recognize that he understood that it was me, because when I spoke to him, I could not speak. I went roar, 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 roar as well. So, but he recognized that it was me, and he did get me help.
Wow. What a terrifying experience. Did you, as the blood began to kind of spread in your brain, did you ever begin to feel that you were dying?
I did. On the morning of the stroke, after my colleague came and gave me help and took me to the first hospital, and the first hospital ran a CAT scan on my brain, and it showed this major hemorrhage in the left hemisphere. And at that point, I just really didn't have any energy left in my body, and I curled up into a little fetal ball. The best way for me to describe it is I felt my energy shift. I felt my whole body become lighter, I surrendered, if you will. And I knew that I was no longer the one choreographing my life, and either the doctors rescue my body, and give me a second chance at life, or this was going to be the moment of my death. And I have to say that it was, you know, you hear about these stories about it's an extremely peaceful experience. Well, for me, it was a total experience of euphoria. The more detached I became from the external world, my relationship to it, my relationship to individuals, the lighter I felt in my body and the more euphoric I felt. So I essentially found a space of nirvana.
Was it a disappointment to begin to come back?
It wasn't a disappointment, but it was definitely a process. And for me, it was a decision because I did feel this incredible sense of euphoria. I lost the boundaries of my body, the cells in my brain that understood where I begin and where I end. So I felt that I was as big as the universe. At the same time, I was still alive. My body had been stabilized. I was given another opportunity to live life. And so it was a conscious choice for me. 1,000 times a day, am I willing in this moment to attend to the details that I do not understand and to endure that agony of recovery in order to try to make sense of the external world, which seemed to spiral at 1,000,000 miles an hour with chaos? So I don't think it was a disappointment because, you know, the amount of time that I'm going to have in this body is nil, hardly anything in comparison to time. So I can't say that it was disappointing, but I can tell you that when my time comes again, there will be no fear and there will be probably an elation and celebration.
There's so many remarkable things about your story. One of the most remarkable is that you're talking to us and fluently.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Why was the damage not permanent?
Well, you know, the damage does not have to be permanent. I was very fortunate in that the hemorrhage happened in my cerebral cortex, which is my ability to think. So I lost my mind. I lost my past. I lost my memories of my life prior to that. At the same time, memories are things that you can make new ones. And once the hemorrhage, 2.5 weeks after the hemorrhage, the physicians went in and removed this blood clot the size of a golf ball that was pushing on my brain cells, not allowing me to think. And once that was removed, I was capable of learning again. I essentially was an infant in a woman's body, but I had the potential to regain ability. I was very blessed that my mother came back into my world and took over. She recognized that I was now an infant again, and we started at the very beginning of, you know, what do you do with a baby? You rock her. And so she comes into my life, and she started rocking me. And we started again in our relationship, and language was my number one priority. I figured if my body never came back, okay, I could, you know, make amends for that. But if I didn't have language, then I really could not be as active a member of our society. So language was my number one priority for recovery.
You lost so much from the stroke. You know, you talked about losing language and losing logic and losing numbers and losing your memories. You gained a lot too, though. You know, when the left hemisphere shut down, you suddenly were able to access and come into all of the ways of perceiving that belong to the right hemisphere. Can you describe some of what that was like?
Yeah, it was really wonderful. You know, we have these two very different hemispheres inside of our heads, and they process information in totally different ways. And the right hemisphere thinks in pictures, and it is all about the present moment. It is analyzing and perceiving all the information from our sensory systems, creating a big, enormous collage of this present moment. And the existence of the present moment is beautiful. There's no judgment there. It's just it is. And when I lost the judgment and the critical analysis ability of my left hemisphere, I lost the past. I lost the future. I was given the present moment. And the present moment, you know, when you laugh, when you feel joy, it happens right here, right now. It's a present moment experience. And when you feel calm and you feel peaceful, it's because you're out of the past, you're out of the future, and you're just experiencing, allowing your body to relax into the present moment. And for me, it was a total experience of peacefulness and euphoria.
You know, one of the things I think is so potentially exciting about what you've discovered is that up until now, the kind of experience you're describing as the right hemisphere experience has been the goal of various meditation and prayer practices. And, you know, many religions write about it, talk about it. But what's happened with you is that what has been up until now kind of a matter of faith and belief, you're able to demonstrate how it's, no, it's simple scientific fact. You know, you don't, instead of saying to us, your birthright is this experience of oneness with all that is, you know, and that being a matter of faith, you're saying, no, it's right there. It's in your right hemisphere. It's just part of your brain.
Yeah. Well, you know, and even coloring, you know, have you ever noticed that if you just sit down with a coloring book and, you know, how many people in their 40s actually sit down with a coloring book or go to art class or go into a space and say, I have zero plans for the next hour. What am I going to do? I'm going to create something. And allowing yourself to just figure out in this moment, what am I going to do? There's an entire population of people who are writing to me saying, oh, my gosh, you're validating my world. Thank you so much. They're giving their families their books and saying, this is why I'm the way I am. It's because I got a right hemisphere. You know, I have creativity. I have this experience of spontaneity and the willingness to be in the moment. And you know, our left hemisphere looks at these people and says, but you're not being productive. So there's incredible bias to the right hemisphere experience because those individuals are, you know, they have their head in the clouds or they're not always, you know, on time. That drives me nuts. They're never on time. And it's because they're not on time. They're not on your time. They're on their own time, having a great time doing what they're doing. So, you know, judgment, that critical judgment, not just of, yeah, I'm wasting my time here. Why am I sitting here doing this? I'm just wasting my time. And it's like, yeah, that's the point. The point is to allow yourself to get out of the fact that you think that you're wasting your time.
Jill Bolte Taylor, talking with Anne Strainchamps about her book, My Stroke of Insight. Taylor is a neuroanatomist at the Indiana University Medical School.